This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han, with the top business stories of the day. We roam right across the globe. We go from the People's Republic of China to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and then we're off to a little trip in Europe. We are.
Well, yes, we are. You know, but we are. I wish it was more literal. I wish I was literally on a plane,
traveling around the world instead of being stuck in Bandar Utama.
Well, I mean,
informing people
not that
what they need to know.
Not that I appreciate.
You're the Mother Teresa of Bandar Utama, Tang Chung Han. Come on, let's start with the first story. Our Prime Minister has gone to China on a visit. I mean, one of many he's had since he became Prime Minister.
That's right. Seventh visit to China since 2009. So I believe he will be jetting off today. Now, that is for that One Belt, One Road Forum. You know, that's a massive global initiative by China. We'll get into some details there real quick. But May 14th and May 15th, that's when the forum is slated to be held with some 28 world leaders attending, Najib included. Also, you've got the UN Secretary General and the President of the World Bank, etc., etc. So a lot of who's who in terms of global leaders who want a piece of that massive infrastructure pie that China wants to dish out.
You know, it's almost reaching a mythological status, this One Belt, One Road thing. Because hearkening to the Silk Road, I think the Silk Road, of course, being that ancient trade route that took traders from Europe to China across the Eurasian continent. What's also out there, as part of this enthusiasm, some clever fellow went and did this, was to create a little video where a father, an American father, tells his little daughter about the One Belt, One Road system. Because he's saying, I'm going off to Beijing for this conference. She says, but Daddy, what's the conference about? And he says, well, One Belt, One Road. And she says, what's that? And then what unfolds is almost like a fairy tale that he would tell his daughter for bedtime.
Now, what I understand is that video is actually a three-parter. So I'll try to condense this down into 30 seconds. So what is the One Belt, One Road policy? So it harkens back, like you said, to the Silk Road Initiative. But in this modern incarnation, it's going to be an initiative to connect Asia, Europe, and the Middle East, and also Africa. Okay, and it's all about trade and development and logistics and transport. So it's not just a physical road all the way from China going all the way to Belgium, or those railways as well, ports, airports, even fiber optic lines. So all about connecting China or further enhancing the connectivity of China and all these other countries.
One of the expressions that has developed around the network of ports is the string of pearls. So a string of pearls is an expression. I believe it was an American commentator or an analyst who used that expression, not something coming out of China, but this is to describe the network of ports that China is helping build in various countries, and those countries have been are doing very well from this influx of investment. Though there are detractors who are saying that China is also creating a system of obligation by these poorer countries to them by giving them levels of borrowings that they can't possibly pay off. And so they will be forever indebted to China. So that is some of the criticism that's come out on that.
Certainly this initiative is attracting a lot of criticism and also a lot of risk as well, because you've got markets and potential participants in this One Belt, One Road initiative who are saying then, well, what about local jurisdictions? What about the local laws, as you build your massive roads and infrastructure through our, our space, right? So you've got that going on. Also, talking about, again, the rise or the expansion of the influence of President Xi Jinping, right? China's President Xi Jinping. So there are many, many question marks going on, being posed. So you've got global leaders like Angela Merkel, Shinzo Abe, Donald Trump, who are just staying the heck clear of this initiative. This is China's deal. They're not going to touch it. But obviously, you've got 28 countries or 28 world leaders set to convene in Beijing starting on Sunday. Trying to get a piece of that pie. And according to Credit Suisse, all right, now, in terms of that pearl, that the string of pearls that you mentioned.
Colombo, Djibouti, parts of Kenya, Greece, all a part of that string of pearls.
Right. So Credit Suisse is now saying that this could result, just to attach a number to it, this could result in some $500 billion worth of infrastructure spending for these as well. And it could involve some 65 countries. So, you know, basically just stringing it right along, right? So, you know, do you try to get that kind of investment into your own country at the expense of, you know, like you said, perhaps being beholden to, China's soft powers, so to speak. But then, you know, going back to Malaysia, we did have those recent media reports, right, about how now that Bandar Malaysia, the deal between TRX City and Iskandar Waterfront and CREC that has been deemed null and void. So the expectations that perhaps this weekend, when Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib goes to China, there could be a new partner there. Wanda, Dalian Wanda, their name has been thrown around quite a bit in anticipation of this potential signing. So we'll have to wait and see.
So, okay, so some deals might unravel, but are China's global ambitions as a whole unraveling? And I believe some reports have come out suggesting as much. But China's also been subject of a lot of negative reporting, especially around its economy. And that's not always panned out. In fact, China seems to have defied its critics and continued to grow despite concerns about its financial infrastructure.
Yeah, you know, so as President Xi Jinping goes about, you know, waving this one belt, one road, or dangling this carrot, a very lucrative carrot in front of all these world leaders. But at the same time, when you look at what's happened last year, so you have a $246 billion foreign buying spree that apparently has, you know, come off the seams quite a bit. Now, we have seen now how Chinese authorities have gone about with their capital controls, right? So on one end, how do you reconcile this pullback, or this attempt to limit limited capital outflows on one hand, on the other, then spending money into this broader global infrastructure theme, right? I think that's going to be a balance that many market analysts and investors will be keeping a close eye on.
I believe also that China's regulators, especially for its state-owned enterprises, have come out to say that they in fact can manage things. They can manage the associated political and security risks as well as the financial costs of the One Belt, One Road program.
Exactly. You know, hence, if you've got these kind of comments from the chief regulator for state-owned companies, you know, from the petroleum state-owned company to even the energy ones, you know, even cement, right? So the fact that they're having to come out and make these kind of statements show that there is, it's not a smooth road. You know, there's still plenty of risks associated with such a grand ambition. And, if you're going to take their word for it, you know, you read into that what you will. Apparently, China and their state-owned companies can all manage them just fine. Those risks, again, being, how do they appease local regulations? You know, how do they see this not as being a way of just, being another case of checkbook diplomacy, so to speak?
Well, speaking of checkbook diplomacy, we have the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia this morning, as well as one of the stories that we picked.
That's right. So you've got this China One Belt, One Road thing going on. On the other hand, you also have the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. Looks like Saudi Arabia is set to spend some $40 billion U.S. dollars in investments, specifically in U.S. infrastructure. So this ties in quite well with President Donald Trump's ambitions to roll out that $1 trillion infrastructure spending. So $40 billion, it's a bit of a pittance compared to the $1 trillion. It's terrible that I'm saying, making statements like $40 billion, it's a pittance. But in the grand scheme of things, of that $1 trillion, it's relatively small. Right?
Yeah, but the question, of course, for Donald Trump, he's got to get congressional approval for his vision of that infrastructure spend, whereas in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is not a democracy, where the checks and balances might be of a very different order, the desires of the monarch or those who lead might be much more easily translatable into fact than in America, where there is in fact a much more elaborate system of checks and balances.
Yeah, certainly. And so when you look at the kind of statements that are coming out of market investors, and certainly these are sovereign funds, right, Saudi Arabia included, obviously there is no short supply of enthusiasm to jump on this U.S. infrastructure spending plan. So Saudi Arabia, $40 billion now. And this is in the lead up to President Donald Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia this time next week. I believe it'll be on May 19th. So, this is the kind of news flow that's coming out in anticipation to that. But I think it's also just overall just seeing how the fund flows are around the world, seeing how funds are perhaps being allocated for the One Belt, One Road initiative and also U.S. infrastructure spending. It's very fascinating to see ultimately, you know, given that the U.S. and also the U.K., right, these developed economies have signaled a more protectionist stance. They're pulling back. Now the question is, can China then step up?
Also, very quickly in the news, we have a story that a European Union court has thrown a monkey wrench into Uber's gears.
Yeah, that's right. So now this is fascinating because, you know, when Uber first launched, you know, you recall the initial impression was that they are this bad guys. They're going to go in there and just, you know, wreck things. And we're just going to stick it to the man and offer this valuable service to, you know, many of these residents of that local vicinity who want just that that ride sharing service. Right. But then now you've got the European Court of Justice, you know, the advisor saying that, Uber, you are indeed a transportation service and not just this middleman, this intermediary connecting passengers to drivers. You know, so essentially that's the ruling. So now the question is, you know, what is that going to do to Uber's operations in Europe as a whole? Because if you recall, you look at it in a global context, Uber has had multiple run-ins with local authorities, not just in Europe, here in Malaysia as well. So it's whether Uber can adjust and or meet those, once again, local regulations.
We'll be back with more business news after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.